This is the Convene Podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Convene Talk, where we discuss interesting stories that appear in our popular newsletter, News Junkie. My name is Magdalena Tanasova. Maybe I should start calling myself Maggie on these intros. We should be friends by now. Digital media editor of Convene. A little insert to say that this talk turned out to be quite comprehensive. So this is part one of our discussion on the dynamics between different generations and their engagement with events. Now back to the episode. This time, Casey is going to tell us more about the story that she picked. So Casey, go ahead.
Thanks, Maggie. The story I chose this week originally comes from the Philadelphia Business Journal, and it's a Q&A with Jennifer Ross, founder and CEO of JR Global Events. She discussed different industry trends in the interview, and one trend in particular that she highlighted that I wanted to call out was the shift in demographic when it comes to who attends events and how planners can cater to them. So unlike older generations, she said Gen Z, which in the workforce would be anyone in their 20s up through about 27 or so, isn't just going to any business event anymore. They want to know how much of their time is required for an event, how much free time is built in while they're there, and how they can kind of manage their work-life balance while they're on site. Jennifer said people are prioritizing their personal space and time within whatever conference agenda you've put out there, and that the younger generations are putting their lifestyle preferences and work ethic first, and historically that has not been the case. So to adapt, Jennifer said she's really changing the way she looks at agendas, which I think is something we found in a lot of interviews we've done with planners in recent years, trying to build in more white space, making sure people aren't in a conference room all day, and really allowing time for networking and brainstorming. And a lot of that is being driven by Gen Z. They're kind of showing everyone that you don't have to have the typical conference format. You can leave time to explore and interact. We've written about Freeman's Gen Z report a few times, which said pretty much the exact same thing Jennifer did. Gen Z is seriously considering what events they attend in person, if any, and they're not interested in anything that's overprogrammed and doesn't allow time for them. So I was really interested in hearing what you guys thought about the interview.
Hi, this is Barbara Palmer, deputy editor. I thought that was really interesting, the way she zeroed in on the fact that people want to meet differently. And when I think about the Freeman study, they did something really interesting on the report they released last year about the next generation. They called it NGEG, Next Generation Event Goer. And they did not use the typical generational partitioning. They defined an NGEG as anyone between 20 to 44. And I thought that was a very useful way of looking at it. One of the interesting revelations in their research was that the event goer, the age has dropped from, I think the average was 51, and now it's 45, which statistically is a big drop. I think one of the lines in the report that really stayed with me was that older generations tolerated being captured in a conference room for 12 hours, and the younger generations expect to be captivated. You know, they're not going to stay there if they don't need it. And I was thinking of the changes that have happened at conferences. I remember my first job out of college was I was the news writing lab director at a community college. And there was a conference at the University of Missouri on newspaper design. We were doing newspapers and we only had travel funds for two students. So I took four and we shared hotel rooms. We had a men's hotel room and a women's hotel room, and we ate pizza and we drove for hours to go to this conference that would be something that you could see online now, you know? And the thing is, it was grueling and it was a blast. And it's the information. You have to make what it is they're getting so compelling that they will, you know, go through what it takes to get there. So I thought it was a very interesting article and, you know, gave us all an opportunity to say things have really changed. We can't do things the way we used to.
This is Michelle, editor-in-chief. So, you know, when you're talking about, a couple of things come to mind. One is I'm of the boomer generation, and I think we just expected to like sit in a dark audience and be talked to and for hours and hours, because it's similar to, if you look at conferences as continuing education, is very similar to being taught in a classroom where you were just expected to sit quietly and just have somebody lecture and just passively receive the information. I don't know. I haven't been in a classroom in a long time. I don't know if that has changed for the younger generation where they're much more engaged. It's more dynamic. I think just harkens back to the way we were all taught in school, at least my generation. So continuing education was just like a continuation of that. But I also think that the changes that Jennifer talks about are not just the young generation coming in. I think she raises an interesting question for me, is she really thinks that the pandemic put us back 15 years, the business events industry. I don't necessarily agree with her, but I do think it caused people, even like myself, who are not in the Gen Z group, to rethink how we're spending our time universally. How are we investing our time? Because for a period of years, we were forced to stay home and interact with the world in a very different way. And for me, I just decided I wasn't going to go back to the way things were before. I wasn't going to be on the road all the time like I was before, because afterwards, I recognized the drain it really took from me personally and from my personal life. And so I think that some of these changes are attributed to the pandemic and how we all reevaluated our lives. And some of it is generational. But I don't necessarily agree with her that we've been set back by 15 years. I think it definitely accelerated the digital part of what the value proposition is for events. Whether everybody's embracing that is another question, because we have learned having face-to-face plus digital is not only labor intensive, it's expensive, and you need to rethink it. It's not the same kind of experience. So I think we're still wrestling with that, but I would disagree that we have been set back by 15 years. Casey, seems like you're nodding in agreement with me.
Yeah, Michelle, I agree. I feel like looking at it as being set back could only come from a mindset of thinking that events can only be done in one sort of way. I think, as you said, the pandemic really gave people an opportunity to slow down and consider what's really important to them when things are quieter, and what's important in their personal life, not just their professional life. And I see that as only a positive thing. If events can better incorporate work-life balance by not having such a busy schedule or allowing more time to have human interaction and networking opportunities, I think that's great. And I also think it's great if we can incorporate more digital options for a number of reasons, for accessibility, whether that's physical or financial barriers. Environmentally, it's great if you don't want to have to fly on a plane to get to an event and you have another way to access that education. So I don't look at it as a setback at all. I think it just sort of sparked an evolution of it going in a different direction.
This is Kurt, digital editor. You know, the idea, I don't think it's set us back 15 years either. And I agree with both of you about it's just sort of evolved and changed. But what I was going to talk about was when what Michelle said about it's not necessarily an age thing as much as it is maybe, you know, the pandemic and the experience of the pandemic changed people's priorities. I did a story about how this medical association, it's the Association for European Pediatric and Congenital Cardiology, when they were trying to find ways to attract younger members. And I mean, these are all probably already surgeons. So I would say the youngest might be, what, 30s, maybe? Mid-30s, maybe? But, you know, so they did a lot of interesting things to get these people to come to their convention, but also trying to get people to join the association. Because as Louise Gorringe, who's Kinnis Group's Associate Vice President for Association Management, told me, that a lot of associations are having a problem trying to attract younger members, because younger people in those professions want to maybe give back, but they want to do everything on their own terms. They want to be able to make decisions and decide, you know, this, I want to do this, and I want this part, and I want this part, and that kind of thing. So, you know, that sort of goes along with the story about, you know, the Gen Z, but I think these people are older than Gen Z. If Gen Z cuts off at 27, she talked about a lot how associations are trying to come up with ways to get people, to get members who are younger, because of those kind of things. And one of those ways was to stretch their education out over digital learning, as opposed to just at the meetings, the live meetings or the in-person meetings, but to take all those education seminars and thing and do more throughout the year that people could engage with that way. So I think it's happening both in associations and for association meetings as well.
I've had a very strong reaction to that little line of setting the industry back 15 years when I've witnessed this whole process myself firsthand, working for a PCO, how the company, I can say the industry really strived to reinvent itself in a very, very short period of time. So I thought, the audacity of saying this. And I thought of taking a minute to calm my reaction down. The article focused on being very me-centric. Yes, the new generation is like that. And I think we all have to learn from them quite a bit. And I love the example of the food and dietary restrictions that was given, that for a 60-person meeting, 22 had dietary restrictions. And I recognize myself in there because I also have dietary restrictions. And I would be one of those annoying people with my specialty meals. And I thought, what a good way to actually shine a light on this me-centric idea, because food is very personal to all of us. I mean, we connect it to our upbringing, to where we come from, and it's something so very personal. You know, it's how we've decided to feed our bodies and get our energy effectively.
I was really taken by your picking up on her talking about food and special requests, because she seems to like do a kind of broad brush stroke that this is like people are picky eaters and they just want to eat what they want to eat. I think it doesn't acknowledge that food allergies are on the rise and that there are people who, they're not picky. They just can't eat the food or they're going to be in serious trouble. Barbara is one. I have a shellfish allergy. My daughter has severe allergies to seeds and nuts. And when we approach eating, it's kind of scary to not feel like those needs are being attended to, and you may be eating something that is going to end up being dangerous to you. So that I kind of felt like, yes, I get that it is very annoying, I'm sure, for a planner to have to create all these different menus for people. But it's not because they're picky eaters most of the time. It's because it's not a lifestyle choice either. It is like what they have to live with and how they have to, you know, go out in the world and make sure that they're not in any kind of danger. So sorry, Jen, I didn't mean to get on my soapbox, but that did annoy me. I get how difficult it is to create all these different menus, but it's not always because people just want to be me-centric. There are actual reasons.
A few years ago, PCMA showcased how you can do it with just a single menu at Convening Leaders. I don't remember which exactly it was. I think it was the one in Austin. The whole menu was without any allergens. There you go. And it was delicious. And it catered for everyone at the same time. And if you think about it, eliminating meat as well. I mean, yes, I eat meat myself, but I don't mind not eating meat for a few days, and it's more sustainable. So I think that was a great example of you can actually do it in a very easy and sustainable and cheaper way. Jen, what did you have in mind?
No worries. This is Jen, senior editor. So lots of thoughts on all of that. I think with the dietary restrictions, though, I'm sure many of those are legitimate allergies, celiac, et cetera. I'm sure there are some that are not that legitimate. I am sure that there are some who are like, I only eat raw vegan. Like, okay, you can put that away for a day because that's ridiculous. You know what I mean? Like, I do feel like there are people who just really try to exercise their preferences to a degree that is not actually realistic sometimes. Anyway, I just wanted to put that out there. I'm an Airbnb host, by the way, as my other job, and I get a lot of people who try to pass their animals off as service animals when they're in fact not. So there's a lot of gaming the system in hospitality that I think is interesting, and it sucks for the people who have legitimate needs and concerns. So just wanted to point that out. But something I thought was interesting about her comment, and this is just kind of devil's advocate, just kind of conjecture, but like, if you read the next paragraph, it kind of sounds like, I'm going to read the sentence so our readers and our listeners understand. She said, I actually feel like what the pandemic did for us was set our industry back probably 15 years. I would have thought post-pandemic, we would have jumped back bigger, louder, but we sat back and took a step back as an industry. Then she goes on to say, as far as service and quality and expectation and just legitimizing us as an industry going forward, I think we're still going to have to be fighting for a seat at that table because we really are those event managers that have been doing this a long time. So when I read that and kind of read what the rest of what she says, which our listeners can click the link and read the article in full, it kind of sounds like she's alluding to the fact that we lost so many people and that's what set us back in the industry. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm totally off base. I kind of wish this writer, this interviewer had done a better job of following up on this question saying, what do you mean specifically? Because it sounds very vague. She could be talking about a number of different things. I mean, I agree with you. I think like generally, have we been set back? No, like we've innovated in a lot of ways in the industry. But I kind of feel like she might be alluding to that. And if that's the case, I do kind of agree with her because we have lost a lot of talent across the spectrum of the industry and multiple different areas. So as far as generations go, like Gen Z, I feel like I agree with what you guys were saying. It's not so much a generation thing. I actually think our industry has been evolving in that direction for a really long time. I feel like when I started in 2007, I think that's when I got hired at Meetings and Conventions magazine. I feel like even then I was hearing more and more people talk about, you know, different formats, the unconference. I remember that being a term that was being like thrown around. So I don't really think this is a Gen Z thing. I don't think they just like came out of the woodwork and were like, this is the way we should meet. Like, no, they're in their 20s. They're new to the work industry. They're not like, you know, oracles who know more than everyone else. I think it's easy when you're young to kind of like look at things in a way and think, oh, this should be better. This can be better without really knowing what goes into everything. You know what I mean? And I think that's true for any generation. Like I would love to know, Barbara and Michelle, what you guys think, because I think you can apply a lot of things that you apply to Gen Z, or I'm a millennial. So millennials, sometimes they get referred to as being like super young. And I'm like, no, I'm 40. Like, I don't, you know, we've been around a minute. But you know what I mean? And I do feel like you can attribute those things to any new young generation that's like coming into the workforce or just, you know, coming into adulthood. And I also am just like so over putting people in generational boxes because, you know, working with you, Barbara, and you, Michelle, I could never apply the boomer, you know, stereotypes that are out there to either of you. And you know, I wouldn't necessarily apply stereotypes. My friends that are Gen Z are like close to that age. I couldn't necessarily apply those stereotypes to them. So I do feel like I wish we collectively, like as an industry, but also as a society, would stop talking in generational boxes and let's just move beyond that because it's getting a little trite. That's how I feel about that.
I would love to respond to that because I agree. And I was looking at the Pew Research Center. They came out last year and said they were dropping the generational boxes in their research, and they had a very precise definition. They talked about how it's misused because it's just not relevant. And I completely agree that all generations enjoy personalized experiences, enjoy food that we can eat, that we enjoy space to rest. And I'm thinking about like C2 Montreal, that I just found like that was so, this has been a long time ago. It's so innovative. And they had parts that were big and loud, but those were more like energizing moments. But most of the conference, you could have hands-on things. There were small spaces. There were, you know, float down the river and talk to someone. And I feel like everybody likes that kind of thing. I appreciate the ability to think about what makes people comfortable and that people are just thinking more about how they want to spend their time and how they want to be with each other. And I can only imagine that if they have a better experience, that there'll be better outcomes for whatever the goals of the events are. I just think that change has been coming a long time, and the pandemic was a laboratory. What would happen if we can't go into these big spaces and meet the same way? So I feel like kind of figuring out, okay, how do those experiments and how do those changes actually look in the real world with a now another changed environment is going to be maybe a little bit like we can't apply the old ways that we did it. We might want to run back to what was comfortable from time to time, but I think it's all to the good. What were you thinking, Casey?
Oh, I just wanted to jump on something Jen said about how, you know, younger generations kind of always come in with these different ideas and say, how can we make this different or better? And I think that's so true. Of course, I agree that it doesn't have an age, what, you know, if you want change or what types of experiences you like. But I think it's worth noting that it is that the youngest generation, when they enter the workforce and enter adulthood, that they usually are historically the drivers of change. And that really permeates throughout the entire culture at the time. So I do think that, you know, there are some things that younger people specifically coming into the workforce are saying, we don't have to operate in the old ways. We can make things better for ourselves. We can have better work-life balance that maybe older workers are resistant to. But I do think that as that younger group gets older, that will become more the norm, as it has been for every youngest generation in the past. They're really driving changes.
I was going to say, I think it has to do too with what's happening in those years that those young people come in. You know what I mean? I'm curious to know, mm-hmm. Michelle and Barbara, like when y'all were that in that age group, that like 20s, what things were going on in the world? For me as a millennial, I like entered the workforce and a year later, the economy collapsed. So that's why I feel like you see a lot of, from my generation, you know, like just funny commentary and we can't afford, you know, millennials can't afford anything. They can't afford a house, like da 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 da, all this stuff that shapes it too. I do feel like Gen Z came in at a time when, I mean, things have been volatile since, but things were pretty good. Like, you know, things were depending on what year, but like, I'm curious to know, Barbara and Michelle, like when you were in that group, what was it like then? Did you guys get the same kind of reaction from the generations that were older than you, kind of saying the same type of things? Like, I'm interested to know what it was like then.
You can listen to part two of this conversation and Michelle's answer in next week's episode. Until next time.